Bandwidth for this podcast is brought to you by CashFly at CacheFly.com. This is We Have Communicators, episode 92, recorded on July 6, 2010. Enjoy! All right, it's time for We Have Communicators. I'm Michael Johnston, and this is the show that talks about the iPhone, the iPod Touch, the iPad, iPhone 4, iOS 4, iTunes, all that good stuff. With me, as always, is Adam Christensen from the MacCast. Hey, Adam, how you doing?
Oh, hey, I'm here. Hey.
Hey. And Jeff Gamet is also here from the Mac Observer. Hey, Jeff.
How's it going?
Great. How's it going with you?
It's just swell.
Wonderful. All right. So we are talking about the iPhone, and it seems like the hottest topic is, of course, the iPhone 4's problems, not so much the iPhone 4's magical wonders. Do they call the iPhone 4 magical and wondrous like they do with the iPad, or is that just the iPad?
No, that's just the iPad.
Okay. Well, I think the iPhone 4 is kind of magical in that it doesn't work properly.
The screen is magical.
Okay. That is true. Yeah.
Yeah, the iPhone is like magic in your pocket, which also makes a great pickup line.
Them's fighting words, Michael.
Okay.
Define doesn't work properly. I'm so, you know, I know there's one person that I know of that is having issues, and that is Katie Floyd, but she has classically had reception problems in her area.
Okay, well,
you know Katie from Mac Power Users?
I don't, actually.
Podcast?
I don't.
Okay. Oh, you need to meet Katie. She's really nice.
She's awesome, but she has always lived in an AT&T dead zone, and she's continued to have problems with her iPhone, and she has a micro cell. So I haven't spoken with her recently to figure out what the latest details are, but I know she's been struggling, but I want to go on the record as saying that in normal usage, so when I'm not trying to like do weird things to the iPhone.
When you're not trying to intentionally make it not work.
Is doing weird things to your iPhone.
Yeah.
But when you're not doing that, when I am just using it normally, and I've asked a lot of people this exact same question. When you use it normally, does it drop calls? Is it any worse than it was before or any better? And everybody says, no, it's actually better at getting signals in areas where I didn't get signals before, and it doesn't seem to drop calls any more or less than it did prior.
Okay, that's good. That's good to know. And when I said that it doesn't work properly, I would like to say that I was being sarcastic, especially because I don't have one yet.
Well, apparently, you know, if you believe everything that is being thrown out there, then these things are horrible. But yeah, I cannot find one person who I can talk to who owns one that says, yes, I'm having these issues. You hear about it all over the net that, oh, well, the bars go down, and the bars do go down, and you can create all this mythical behavior that makes it look like it's having issues, but when you ask anybody about call quality or dropping calls or it being any different, I can't find anybody to confirm with me that it's working
well. I can say
worse
that
than their existing one
without regard to voice and, you know, just taking a call and doing that. My friend Cameron Hunt, who is the developer on one of my favorite applications, Birdhouse, mm-hmm. actually posted a video. I don't know if you guys saw this, but he was able to, he showed it loading a web page, his iPhone 4 loading a web page over 3G. I think he used CNN or NewYorkTimes.com. And he showed it loading normally. And then he showed it loading with his finger on that little separator between the two antennas, that, you know, that crazy left hand spot, and he was able to literally pause and resume. So pause by touching there and letting go would resume the download, and he was able to do that several times in this video.
So my question is, what type of reception does he get in the location that he was doing this in? And if it's a really good reception, can he create the same situation with an iPhone 3G or 3GS? My my guess is that he would be able to do that by covering the bottom half.
I just wanted to show
an old iPhone.
Sorry, that was I just started hitting. I hit play on the video, but I'm looking at it, and he has five bars. And although we know now that Apple has said that that is no indicator of what's actually happening. Now,
that's the bigger story.
Yeah,
to
we
me.
Didn't cover this yet because I guess that happened. Late
last
week.
That was on Friday.
That was on Friday. So Apple came out with a statement, an official statement on the reception issues, saying that the algorithm, the formula that they use to calculate and show bars with relation to what the actual signal strength is wrong. That formula is wrong somehow and is actually showing more bars than you are actually getting at a certain point in time. Now it's a formula, so it's not that, you know, you will drop down two bars no matter what. It really depends on what kind of signal strength you have, but in some cases it's being reported incorrectly. So it could be that in Cameron's case that is incorrect and he has very poor signal at his house, but
which is possible. I think Apple and all cell phone manufacturers should do away with the bars because yes. There's really two scenarios. I can make calls. I can't make calls. And that's it. And so if there's like a little indicator that said you can make calls and another one that said can't call.
Well, yeah, I think at this point, you know, with analog cell phones, it made much more sense because depending on how much signal strength you had, that would increase the quality of the call. Now, with digital phones, like we've had for the last, 10 years, you're either getting it or you're not for the most part.
Well, okay. Right. So did you guys read through an Antec piece that explained what the actual math is behind those bars, you know, the numbers behind those bars are and the actual dB signal drop when you're doing that spanning of the
right.
little
it's
black
like the
thing.
20 dB drop or something
it's
like that.
It's a 24 dB drop, but here's the problem, right, is that Apple, in their little formula, that fifth bar is the best possible cell signal you can get, according to the Inantec piece, is if you were sitting right under the tower, the best you could hope for is a minus 51 dB signal strength. Okay? On the bottom end of the scale, minus 113 is the lowest you can go before you drop. Okay? So you got that? So yep. Minus 113 to 51. In Apple's formula, the fifth bar appears if you have a signal between minus 91 and minus 51. So that's like a 40 dB range, right? It's a 40 unit range. That means bars 4 through 1 are in the range of 113 to 91. So that's another 40? I'm not doing the math right, but someone pull out a calculator. So you see the problem is
it's like
that
20.
Yeah, if you're showing 4 bars, right, and say so you're at 91 and you drop 23 dB or 24 dB according to this piece, 91 minus 24 is, or plus 24, I guess you have to do. So that's
115.
So you've gone to no signal. So if you're in an area that, according to your phone, is saying you have 4 bars,
you may in
you're
fact
drop to
not
zero,
have a signal.
Yeah, but if you were at an area that you were at 51, or if you were at 61 and you dropped 24, well, guess what? You're not going to notice any difference. So that's the problem with Apple's little formula.
Right, yeah.
And, you know, I think the whole thing is about exactly what you're alluding to, Jeff, which is really what they should do is have on or off. You either have signal or you don't have signal. Who cares, right? So, and I think Apple was fudging and, you know, I hate to do this to AT&T, but I have to guess that, you know, this whole, our formula was off and we didn't really know it. That is the thing that smells to me.
Yeah, it sounds more like Apple, it's superficially made it seem like they had better reception than they did.
All right, and now,
Yeah, and I think it's to get over perception that AT&T is bad, you know, cell coverage. So there's all these people who thought they were in a 5-bar area, and in reality, they're going to find out after this change happens that they're in a 3-bar area.
Right. Now, in my house, I usually get 1 to 2 bars because just it's my house, and walking right outside, I'll get 5 and have perfect call quality. But I, you know, I'm not going to, the bar is not going to go down any further than that. It's not going to go to 0 bars with this formula change, I'm guessing. But I do want to say that having that signal strength indicator is useful when it gets low, because I know that if I hold my phone, I can hold it almost as tightly as I can with almost all of my hand covering the back of my iPhone 3GS in a 5-bar area, and I'm not going to affect it that greatly enough that it will drop my call, for example, or give me enough of an issue. Now, if I'm in my house where I have that 1 or 2 bars, seeing that indicates to me, okay, I should probably hold it a little further away, so I'm only using a few fingers and having my hand further away from the back of the phone so I can make a call.
All right, so do you remember when the original iPhone came out, people were complaining about how they were always showing low bars, and then Apple did a software update and everyone was seeing more bars.
I don't remember that.
Did they change the algorithm at that point to what they're using now?
And they're changing it back.
Now they're going to have to change it back to what it was.
Well, I think they are, and I think they're going to trade one problem for another, because now everybody's going to complain that, you know, they have 3 bars where they were getting 5 bars before, and what happened? And they're not going to understand. And what really needs to be driven home is that it doesn't matter. Like you're saying, Michael, your call quality is not going to be any difference whether you have 5 bars or whether you have 1 bar.
Right. Yeah. Now, we're going to have Spencer Webb on next week, one of the guys at Antennasys. And he's been giving a lot of information to the press and just blogging about the signal issue. I don't think he's gotten his iPhone 4 yet, according to his blog, but he has had a little bit of time with someone else's. But I'm thinking by next week, he'll probably have gotten his iPhone 4 and he'll be able to offer some better insight on the issue. But after reading through it, I have a vague sense of the two issues that we need to look at, and they are detuning and attenuation. Now, attenuation is what happens when you decrease a signal when it passes through a medium, which is, in this case, your big fleshy palm.
Right.
And now detune, and that just, you know, that reduces the signal strength and will, you know, cause a drop in bars. Now, that to me is like a non-issue, because every phone, as Apple has said, has this issue. As I've said with my 3GS, my original iPhone, I've always dealt with that because I have low signal in my house. But the bigger issue, I think, and what I think several other places have said, is the detuning issue, which relates to bridging that gap. Now, a lot of people think that you're shorting the antennas by bridging that gap, and it's not the case, because you're not dealing with a DC current on those antennas. It's RF. So, but detuning refers to taking the specific frequencies that those antennas are supposed to operate at and changing them, which will cause it to not work or not work as reliably, because not all of the signal that's being received or sent is the correct frequency. So if by bridging that gap you're getting detuning, then I do see that as an issue, and a confusing issue at that, because I wonder, you know, at some point they must have thought that bridging that gap would cause an issue. So I'm thinking, I've heard MacNN reported that there's a rumor that there's supposed to be some coating on the stainless steel band that prevents that, but that some iPhone 4s that are having this extreme case, and maybe what Cameron is seeing, is because they don't have that special coating on the outside.
I don't. Here's my theory. I don't think they ever did. I think they probably they might now.
That seems reasonable.
You know, I think this is a classic thing where Apple will do the thing where they won't say anything. They'll change something in the design. They'll put a coating, and new phones will have it, and new people won't have the issue, and the early adopter existing people will have the issue, and they'll handle them on a case-by-case basis when they bring them into the Genius Bar, and they'll go, oh, yeah, there's something wrong here. Let me swap that for you.
Yeah.
And just slowly, you know, cycle them out.
Yeah, they're not going to do a recall because, you know, not everybody's grandma cares or realizes or even thinks there's an issue at all. If there is a significant enough issue that, you know, they'll do a recall. But yeah, this case by case thing is what they've done a lot of times in the past.
And I buy that maybe they didn't realize it from a design standpoint.
I just can't say that.
Well, you got to remember all their field testing was in a case.
That's
was in
true.
A shell.
Yeah, but
and some guy stole the phone.
Tests without a case on. I mean, they had to.
Yeah, they're antenna engineers. This is what they do. It just doesn't make sense to me that they didn't think of that. They put a gap between the two antennas. But
did you see the reports that they were like right after all this started coming out? There were like two new job postings.
Yeah,
for, like,
I did see
antenna
that.
Engineers.
I think there are like five
yes.
or six.
Yeah, there were three job postings.
So are you so sure that maybe they really had maybe, some antenna engineers on staff?
Maybe Johnny Ive kind of winged it because they didn't have enough people.
I guess I wouldn't put it past Apple to put form over function and not realize something.
Well, yeah, you know that recessed headset jack. Remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Again, we're going to have Spencer Webb hopefully on next week's show after he's had a chance to look at his phone. But I did also talk to Dave Hamilton, who said he did see an issue with bridging that gap one time, and that past that one time he did not see any issue. He took a wire and touched the two sides and didn't see an issue. So it'll be interesting to see what Spencer says.
The only time I have seen the signal dropping issue with my iPhone 4 was when I handed my phone to a friend and we were in an area where AT&T is known to have a weak signal in Denver. And when she held my phone without grasping it tightly, it was just in her hand, we could watch the bars drop. She hands the phone back to me. I hold it the same way and the bars went back up. Hand it back to her, and they went back down again. And she has small hands.
And sweaty palms.
And she probably has sweaty palms.
Maybe she's a vegetarian or something.
I don't know, actually.
Maybe she
I
drinks don't. A different type of whiskey. Maybe that's it.
That's probably it, yeah.
I think it's gotten blown way out of proportion.
I do, too.
Is what it comes down
I can't,
to.
Yeah. I can't speak for, you know... from personal experiences, but have you guys tried the touching it? Maybe while we're going, you can try loading a web page and see what happens if you bridge that gap. But I'm
you know
guessing
I did some
anything.
Speed tests like that on speedtest.net, and I did when I first got the phone notice a difference with it. Actually, you know, I'd do one speed test and I'd get one rating, and then it would go down significantly. But it never went below sort of the rated range of AT&T. So, you know, when they say that this is your 3G speeds, right? And I could never get it to repeat reliably. So that was my whole thing, is that it would fluctuate just normally. Like I did a test with my 3GS and with my iPhone holding it a bunch of different ways. And I did 7 tests each time, and then throughout the top and the bottom, and over an average, over all the tests, it maintained, it's been consistent every time I've done it. So there's always like this weird anomalous, you know, download where it's really slow, and you know, and the upload's yeah. zero and the download's zero in that one test, no matter whether I'm holding it across the band or whether I'm holding it normally or whether it's just sitting on the table.
Yeah.
So I guess the problem is that there's no baseline to reliably test these things, because every single test is widely fluctuating anyway.
Yeah.
Well, now, if you're using internet uploads and downloads as your measure, which is pretty much what we're limited to,
right?
There's so many variables, and the it's going to, yeah, it's just so hard to get a good baseline from a setup where there are so many things out of your control.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Now, yeah. So that's been my problem with trying to actually test this. But overall, I'm not dropping signal, and I'm getting speed ranges in the range that AT&T would say is my level of service.
Right. Now,
so
Apple Care, Boy Genius got a hold of a copy of the Apple Care internal document that, you know, they use to troubleshoot these issues. And one of the items on there is that they're not giving away free bumpers. Now, is this policy, has this changed at all? Adam, you mentioned something before the show.
No, I mean, I had somebody who you know, told me they got a free bumper.
They yelled at somebody whether or not in an extra mean way.
But this comes down to, you know, Apple has those stated policies for their geniuses, but if you talk to anybody who works at an Apple store, they always have discretion on a case-by-case basis.
Right,
to,
yeah.
Which I think is a really great thing that Apple gives their employees. You know, I've had people go in. Here's a great example. I had a friend who bought a new MacBook, brought it home, was setting it up. First night they had it, was on their lap. Their kid came up, grabbed the back of the screen. It flipped over and smashed on the ground.
Oh,
wow.
Yeah, it was literally hours old, less than 12 hours old. She came in to work the next day, was distraught. I said, you know what? Go into the Apple store. Just tell them what happened. They'll at least give you a price to replace the screen, and you'll know what you're in for. She went in. They replaced it. They said, that's all right. We'll swap it. Now, is that standard policy? Are they going to do that for everybody? Or, you know, no, that's not. You know, but they have that discretionary case-by-case basis to do things. So, you know, I think a lot is attitude. It wouldn't surprise me if people walk in and they go, you know what, we'll give you a bumper case. You know, so
yeah.
I don't think it's policy, but I know it's happening.
You know, it's interesting to think that with the, because I'm waiting on the white iPhone. I wonder if the delay in that is caused any by the antenna issue, or if at the very least the antenna issue that exists with all of the iPhone 4s will be fixed at that point. I'm guessing that it will. And I've also heard that
I'm guessing it's fixed already.
Yeah, it's probably fixed already.
I think that I think they've already dealt with it. And for everybody else,
I think you're right.
Now
they're
going
to issue a software patch and then handle on a case by case. So if I'd have no doubt if I was complaining about dropped calls and signal issues, and I took my iPhone into made a Genius appointment, took it in, did all of the precursory stuff like doing a full restore and everything that they're going to want you to troubleshoot through. If I walked in and could repeat the antenna issue, they probably would swap the phone. And my guess is that they'd give me a refurb that had whatever treatment is on the new phones, and I'd walk out and it'd be a non-issue.
Yeah. What do you guys think of the SIM card fix that some people have said fixes their phone? Some people have said that the SIM card is in there in such a way that some of the contacts actually touch the stainless steel SIM card tray, and that by reseating it, or in some cases people I think have been cutting it or putting tape over it, that actually helps. In some cases.
Is that tray really stainless steel? I'm assuming it's plastic.
No, it's definitely a metal, and I'm guessing it's stainless steel because that's what the band is.
I haven't popped mine out, but I know the one in my 3G is plastic.
Yeah, and the original iPhone's SIM tray was metal, and the 3G and 3GS is plastic, and this is definitely metal. I actually played with Barry's SIM card tray when he was over with his iPhone, and so I guess that could be, but it just seems more like,
okay,
if you
did you
stand
try
on your head in the rain,
exactly,
and touch your nose, and
yeah that's another one of those.
So Michael, did you try conducting electricity through Barry's SIM card tray?
No, I didn't.
and I'm serious, because unless we can prove that it's conducting, then the whole remote possibility that in a small handful of cases, reseating the SIM card or doing some shaving thing or whatever, or coating it with nail polish or whatever people want to try, fixes the problem. I mean, until we know it really conducts electricity, it's just another one of those things like when people say, oh, you know how to fix the hiccups? You need to eat a spoonful of sugar, or you have to stand on your head and drink upside down.
Right. It's all the rubber chicken stuff. It's this, it's the same things we go through with our Mac, and it's all perception. And this is what I keep coming back to people on when they're saying, well, have you heard about this issue? My answer back to them is, do you know anybody who's having the issue specifically? Are you having the issue? Are you dropping calls? What is the reality? Are you getting slow internet connections? Are you getting, you know, so why worry about all this stuff unless there actually is a problem? And then, you know, troubleshoot it or call Apple and take it into a Genius Bar. And I mean, there is the odd case that you got a defective phone, the antenna's not connected right internally. I mean, there's going to be those types of cases that are more a reality. So what's the norm versus what's the not norm, I guess.
Yeah.
Right. And keep in mind, there's a lot of people out there that are looking for a fight. And just want to slam Apple. And, you know, if you want to slam any company, whatever. I mean, that's your thing. So that's fine. And as an example, I was in Starbucks the other day. I know, big surprise. And I'm sitting in Starbucks and I was looking at something on my iPhone. And a guy comes up to me and says, the new iPhone, right? And I went, yeah. And he goes, so what's up with the antennas? Have you heard about that? And I went, oh, okay. So here's what's going on. And I explained the situation to him. And he ends up just cutting me off and he goes, well, it sounds like you're just out to defend them and that's it, and walks away. Right. And what my first inclination was to stand up and create a situation. And luckily I went with my second thought, which was let the jerk walk away and then tweet about it instead and tell the whole world what a dick he is, which is ultimately what I ended up doing.
Did you take a picture of him, of his high-resolution jerk face too?
No, I didn't, because my bits are worth more than that.
That's true. Okay, so there is a real problem, though, with the iPhone 4 that a lot of people can, including our own Adam Christensen,
talk about the real issue here.
Yeah, it's the proximity sensor. A lot of people are seeing that it's not, you know, the proximity sensor is what turns off the display and the touch sensor when you put the phone up to your face, and when you pull it away, it senses that you've taken it away from your face, and the screen comes back on. And Adam, why don't you?
Yeah, so it's just essentially. I've had to kind of change how I talk on the phone, and I have to be a little bit more aware right now until Apple issues a fix. Luckily, I think this is a software patch.
Yeah, it's not actually responding correctly. You're touching you're pressing buttons with your face and hitting end and all these things, right?
Yeah, I've hung up calls. I've put calls on speaker. When I'm done, I'll pull it away and it will have gone to keypad and entered a bunch of weird keys and numbers. Just about anything that you could do from that phone screen, I think, including like trying to start a conference call. So like I've taken the phone down after talking on the phone and seen that it's in the contacts area, you know, looking for someone to add to the phone call. Luckily, it hasn't added anybody magically. That could be really fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Depending on who it decides to conference together. Yeah.
Yeah, and really what it seems like is it's just a little bit too sensitive in terms of the screen comes back on with just a little bit of distance away from my face. So what I've gotten in the habit of doing is just making sure that I keep the earpiece right to my ear, and then I don't have a problem. So it's just if I am getting lazy, or really when it would happen a lot was when I'd try and put the phone in the crux. You know, you put it in your elbow while you're trying to use two hands to do something. That'll definitely... And it make the screen come back on, and then you'll start hitting buttons. And that never happened with my 3GS or my original iPhone. So I think it's just a tuning issue. I think they just need to tell it.
Yeah.
So maybe they're using a more sensitive sensor, you know, that has a more fine increments, and they just haven't tuned it right, is really what it seems like to me.
Yeah. Some users have reported that by restarting their phone, they don't experience the issue, at least right away. Some people have said Apple support recommends resetting some of the settings. Like I think somebody reset network settings. Another person did all settings, and it may be again one of these rubber chicken.
Actually, if you eat
issues.
A spoonful of sugar,
yeah,
or drink a glass of water while standing on your head, that fixes it.
Yeah, exactly.
I tried spitting in the headphone jack, and that seems to have worked.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I can see that.
Jeff, have you noticed?
Do not do that. Do not do that. It's not a fix for this issue. No, I did call. Apple the Genius Bar, and they did the typical thing. They'll look at it because I had read somebody had said they were swapping phones. If it is a hardware issue, I guess they'll do that. But they wanted me to do a restore, which is the typical thing. So I haven't done a full restore of the phone. I did the reset thing. Really, I've just changed the behavior, and I think Apple, when they issue a software update, will do that. I even have a bigger issue though with the iOS 4 update. I don't know if we're going to get to those things, but
yeah, talk about it. Let's go.
I can't wait to hear this.
It's only me as a podcaster. Well, myself and I know This Week in Photography is affected somehow. Mac Geek Gab is not affected, but if you do an AAC podcast,
yeah,
some AAC podcasts, and I cannot figure out why. You know how you can download new episodes or get more episodes from your phone?
Right, yeah.
That does not work under iOS 4 for my feed or for the This Week in Photography AAC feed. You get this movie format is not supported, or this iPhone cannot play this movie file, error message. But if you do the same thing on a phone running 3.1.3 or 3.2 on an iPad, it works perfectly fine. And even stranger is there was one episode in my feed that would play, although the album art was kind of tweaked. And I use exactly the same export settings for every single episode, and I have been using those same export settings for 3 years now. So I'm not really sure what's going on there or why it's not working, but I'm getting like 3 or 4 emails a day from people. And unfortunately, I've contacted Apple. They haven't gotten back to me. So I don't know if I need to tweak something on my end but they changed something in iOS 4 that broke that download. And it only seems to affect AAC podcasts. So there's not that many out there. So a lot of people aren't really noticing the problem.
And equally weird is that MacGeek Gab, the AAC version of that is just fine.
Well, yeah. And so I thought maybe it was a hosting thing. It was a server thing. But I tried even moving my audio files to like Amazon's S3 server and pointing everything there, and that didn't seem to resolve the issue. And I also got samples of I contacted Dave, or I looked at the encoding settings for those and verified them against mine, and we're using the same encoding settings. So I don't know if maybe it's because I use GarageBand and I haven't checked to see if a different encoder might make a difference.
I actually do that podcast, true story, and I use GarageBand.
So I don't know. I used exactly the same settings. So the only variable might be, where the files are hosted, but I tried changing that. So I've tried just about everything and I cannot figure out.
How about file names? Maybe there's something in the characters, in the file names.
Yeah,
could be. I don't know. I'm trying to pull out any possible variable here.
Yeah, so I really could use Apple's help. And what I've just advised people who are experiencing the issue is to go to apple.com/feedback and just mention to Apple, because the more people that, note that they're having the problem, Apple will look into it.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Like I said, it broke in iOS 4, so something changed between 3.2 and 3.1.3 and iOS 4.
Yeah, yeah. We were talking about speedtest.net, and one of the great things about the iPhone 4 is that it has a much higher upload speed than the 3GS did. And I think the 3GS was limited at something like, 300 kilobits per second. Uh-huh. And the iPhone 4 is something around like 1.5 megabits, something like that. Anyway, a lot of users have noted that their upload speeds were around 1500 when they first got the iPhone 4, and now they're down under 100 kilobits per second, indicating that AT&T may be capping upload speeds.
Okay, I've been doing a lot of testing today on that.
Okay.
And it looks like this is a city by city situation. So like I'm in the Denver metro area, and as of right now, I cannot get above 60 kilobits a second for upload speeds.
And that's
And that's on an iPhone 4, and have also tested on a 3GS, and it's the same. I mean, so it's not even like we're hitting the 100 kilobit range.
Do you have a history? Did you try it when you first got your phone? Because I know speedtest.net or the FCC app keeps a history.
You know, I hadn't been testing my 3G data speeds when I first got it. But I did notice that uploading photos to Twitter and Brightkite or sending emails with photos seemed to go a lot faster than I expected they would. So, you know, I don't have any numbers to back that up. And I have noticed today that doing lots of tests throughout the day so that I have a lot of data, everything is staying really low. Now, I had people in other parts of the country start running speedtest.net today on their iPhones so that I could start getting an idea of what's going on in other places. And what I found is that people that are not in the affected cities seem to still have that higher data speed that they're expecting. So like for iPhone 4 people, it's the people that I had testing, it's typically between like 800 and 860 kilobits a second for upload speeds. For 3GS users, their upload speeds are like around 300 kilobits a second, which is about what I would expect because no one gets real world usage that matches what the theoretical specs are going to be. So, yeah, so based on what I've been finding, this is just a city-by-city thing, which has me thinking that people that are saying AT&T is capping the data, they're looking for the problem that they want to see. And I think, in fact, AT&T is having a technical issue in certain cities, and they're working on the fix.
Didn't AT&T actually say, or some AT&T representative, a couple of posters on Mac Rumors have said that they spoke with AT&T and they said that that AT&T was experiencing data issues in some of the country in select areas. Now, I just tested my upload speed, and the first one I did just now it's 47 kilobits per second upload, and I'll test it a few more times as we go on, but
I can give you my numbers because I tested this with my iPhone and my iPhone 3GS, although I did it in megabits per second.
Okay.
And I was getting...
So people just have to do the math.
Yeah, on the iPhone 4, it was 0.93, so almost 1 megabit per second. And this was an average. So I did 7 tests and then threw out the top and bottoms and then averaged them. And then on the iPhone 3GS, I was getting 0.062 megabits per second upload. So significantly, you know, that's like, what, 10 times, more than 10 times upload speed between the iPhone 4 and the iPhone 3GS. And I'm not getting the capping for sure because, like, right now if I do a speed test, and this is the weird thing that I wanted to point out, very often I will have faster upload speeds than download speeds.
That's weird.
Bizarre to me.
That is interesting. Yeah, I'm trying to do mine, and it may be that I'm in my office, which is a terrible place to have an iPhone because it's like a bunker. I only got it to test once, and I've tried it many times, and a lot of times it's just kind of sitting on the latency test in progress. So, you know, who knows? It seems like AT&T, at least according to these comments, that they're just simply having data issues right now, and it could be, you know, related to 4th of July stuff.
I don't know.
So as far as AT&T representatives telling people that, I don't know because AT&T hasn't said anything to me yet. However, they did tell me this morning that they're working on a statement. which I thought was kind of interesting, and I still haven't seen anything from them.
Well, that indicates that if it was an intentional capping thing, then they may not have to work so long on a statement as they would if they're not sure what's going on yet.
Yeah. What I'm thinking is that it really is a technical issue in certain areas. And instead of issuing a statement where they say, yeah, we know something's wrong, sorry, they want to issue a statement saying, here's the problem and here's when it will be resolved.
Right.
Which I think is a much better statement to make.
Mm-hmm. And Michael, on the data, on the detuning issue, just for the record, because I just tried it now, I pulled my bumper case off. And if I'm on speedtest.net and I'm in the middle of the test, so you know how it has the little meter going up?
Yeah.
And if I detune, bridge that gap and detune it, I can get it to stop completely.
Oh. Well, yeah. Then, yeah, it seems like there's a problem. That's not a... Good.
Yeah, this phone, you know, may be making a trip to the Apple store, but I know I have the bumper case and it that seems to resolve that issue, or if I just don't hold it there. So that, you know, that goes back to the original statement of
don't hold it
like that.
Yeah. Steve Jobs says that over the air HD video uploading is coming in the future, which probably will come next year when they get FaceTime going.
Isn't that like saying that at some point in the next 24 hours, the sun will rise? I mean, that's kind of a given. That's how technology is going to advance. Of course it's coming.
Right. Yeah. But it's probably not going to come before we see FaceTime working over 3G. And that is something that Steve mentioned will be happening next year. I'm guessing it's, you know, they're working with AT&T or...
Wait, did he really say next year?
He did, yeah.
Where did he say that? Because I completely missed that.
During the keynote, he actually said that.
Are you sure he said next year or in the future? Because I remember him saying we're working on it.
Next year, he said. I'm almost positive. And you guys can call in or email if you have any comments or corrections on that one. But I'm pretty sure he said that. We're also seeing rumors that, you know, the Lala acquisition, the streaming music service that Apple acquired, supposedly wireless device syncing is coming soon. And I think this is slightly related to that. This is maybe syncing your phone over Wi-Fi, right? Or is this actually syncing with or streaming music?
Well, that's from another Boy Genius Report rumor, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay. So in that one, what they were talking about is two types of data streaming or music and video streaming. One involves streaming directly from Apple servers, and one involves streaming from your computer out to other devices. And then the rumor also mentioned wireless data syncing.
Okay. Gotcha.
Which I'm assuming would be Wi-Fi, because doing something like that over Bluetooth would be an exercise in pain and anguish.
Yeah, well, the iPhone 4 has 802.11n, and I'm guessing that with my limited testing, based on my limited testing with that Wi-Fi sync thing, you'll definitely want 802.11n, if not just you really want to be plugged in. But the fact that we'll see the type of streaming, one that comes from Apple's servers, according to Boy Genius Report, and is interesting, and that's the Lala type of service. It seems like it would be a Lala type of service, but we're also, you know, remember that company Simplify Media that did Simplify Music, which was a really cool... It would let you stream music from your house computer as long as it was turned on. It sounds like Apple's gearing up to do that. Now, that service was purchased by Google a month or two ago and is going to be used in the Android OS. So it makes sense that, you know, at this point, Apple and Google are competing in this space. It makes sense that they would add it as well.
It would make sense.
And it's a fantastic service. I really miss it. You know, it sucks. They just turned it off a few weeks ago. And that was just, even though I put a lot of music on my iPhone, sometimes there was just, you know, some random song that I wanted to hear and I could pull it up and stream it from my computer at home. So, you know, at the very least, I hope that, that Apple sets up, you know, they already have the Find My, or not Find My iPhone, but the Back to My Mac thing. It's essentially that. It's essentially just adding that awareness to iTunes and on the iPhone, and then, you know, you can do the same deal.
Well, it's just taking your home streaming that you can already do to your Apple TV or your other Macs and just adding in the Back to My Mac feature so that wherever you are, it can find your home network and stream over the internet.
Yep.
But the big dilemma, and I totally believe this, and this is in this story too, is that the holdup is licensing.
Yeah, supposedly the labels have not yet agreed on the service terms yet.
Wait, are you telling me that the record labels are not happy with current licensing deals and want to find new ways to squeeze more pennies out of us?
I know, shocking, isn't it?
I'm glad I'm sitting down.
Yeah.
Yeah, so hopefully we'll see that in September, but really it's mostly rumors, but supposedly they're not on board yet. So nothing immediately.
Well, I mean, and this is the same thing that Apple had to go through when they first launched iTunes, when they first brought movies, that they're still going through to a certain degree with TV. You know, it's just, it takes so much time to get these deals done, and you have to deal with so many entities at so many different levels. I can't even imagine that how that whole department has to work, you know, working out all this licensing stuff.
Yeah, yeah. So I have not been using iOS 4 yet, and I understand you guys are because you're using iPhone 4s. Can you guys talk about how iAds are so far? Because I haven't experienced an iAd.
There's not enough of them, I can tell you that.
Isn't there like two of them?
I need to download an app that has iAds in it.
Okay. So one of Michael's favorite developers has an app called Mirror Free.
Oh, yeah. Okay. That's two of my favorite developers, actually. It's Leighton Duncan, who is at Polar Bear Farm, and David Barnard, who does AppCubby. They teamed up on that app.
Yeah. So the one called Mirror Free, and look for the one by, what's the name of the company?
I think it's Michael? AppCubby. I think it's listed under AppCubby.
Yeah. Oh, AppCubby. Yeah, it's AppCubby and Polar Bear Farms. So make sure you get that one, because there's a couple ones called Mirror Free, and I got the wrong one first, and it was really lame. And another good one is the Air Hockey by Celero. Is that how you say it?
I do not know.
I think that's the name of the developer. Yeah. Anyway, so you can get the ads to come up. The problem with that one is you have to kind of, you know, play a game and then lose, and then the ads come up.
So how are they? I see the one for the, what is it, the Nissan Leaf or something like that?
Yeah, so that's the problem, is there's the Nissan Leaf ad and there's a Dove ad. Those are the two that I've seen. Dove for men.
Okay. So at least they're targeting the main iPhone demo. Nerdy dudes with iPhones. But yeah, have you tapped on it and experienced some
and they're
cool stuff?
Actually very, very compelling. I mean, they're like really well done and very interactive, and you know, it has cool things like you can enter to get more information or enter to win a Nissan Leaf right from within the ad. And it has a cool thing where you shake to change the color of the Nissan Leaf that you want to try and win. And then when you get the color, then you can enter. So, I mean, it's got video in there. It's got it loaded quickly. The biggest problem is getting them to come up, and then also to just see different ones. There's really only the two ads. And I was frankly very shocked that there doesn't seem to be, or I haven't seen a Toy Story 3 one, which is the one that was demoed.
Yeah.
And, you know, with that being out in theaters right now, you would think that ad would be there, but I haven't seen it. Yeah.
All right. So I just saw the Nissan ad come up in the Mirror app. And actually, that was very cool because it was unobtrusive. The ad banner was at the bottom of the window. And so the ad didn't come up until I proactively selected the ad.
Right.
And So it's kind of cool. The little video was neat. And, yeah, I mean, this is kind of cool, being able to spin the car around and, yeah.
There's a cool section where you can see a couple of other different little videos, and it has this cool little rotator thing that you flick through. And it's actually, the ads, I was just very shocked. They're really well done, of course, and they're very engaging if you choose to interact with them. And like Jeff said, I mean, you really don't have to. I mean, as it starts out, it just appears like a little banner like any other ad, but they actually look a lot nicer than some of the things I've seen from AdMob and just how they're presented in terms of the frame and where they are. Of course, the developer gets to pick where they are, but you know, overall, they just look good. They don't look really out of place in the app, where I've seen other ads that just are like, ugh, that's really ugly inside this really beautiful app.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
I always feel dirty when I see one of those ads in an application. Just like, ah, it just
well. And the air hockey
good.
Game is a good one to see this, because they have ads from a couple different vendors, and they're kind of stacked on top of each other, and you can really tell the quality difference of the iAd. And I think that's because of Apple's, you know, control over it as much as the advertising agencies. And people don't like that at this point. Apple's being really controlling. And who knows if that'll change as they are forced to open it up or do open it up to try and bring on more companies. I hope it doesn't change, because it does make a difference to the app developer. Like, as an app developer, I'd be way happier having one of these iAds in my app than I would just a random Google AdMob ad that looks really ugly.
Right, right. So on the jailbreak front, a very exciting announcement came from Comex, at Comex on Twitter. The same dude who created the Spirit jailbreak has announced that he has successfully ported the Flash runtime from Android over to the iPhone. And he's actually posted a video of him going to various sites, including Homestar Runner, and playing the Trogdor SB email. And he's shown that you can at least some limited interaction with these videos. So, you know, if you're just tapping on a button or something like that, you can do that. And so I haven't heard too much more past that. It's currently an internal beta, so it's not out in the public as far as I know, but it will be, at first it will be for the iPad, and it will then eventually come to the iPhone. But it's very cool. Because there are some things that are in Flash that I just would really like to check out. And my biggest interest is that if it will work with Hulu. Because I don't want to pay $10 for accessing standard Hulu crap on my iPad, because that just is stupid. Did we talk about the Hulu thing on the show?
Is that... Well, I have a question about that. So it is a Hulu Plus only app. So if you don't have Plus, you cannot access any of the content. Is that?
No, that's not true.
Okay.
You can see, there's free content that you can see. I believe you have to go through the whole registration process in the Hulu app.
Mm-hmm.
But then you will have access to free content.
So the standard stuff you would get on the free website too, because the website has the same component, right? You can still see the one or two episodes that are the most recent of the most recent shows. But if you want the back catalog, that's when you have to pay. Is that right?
I'm assuming that's how it's working.
I haven't
played around with it enough to see if I'm finding shows that aren't available on the website.
Yeah, as far as I've been able to tell, it seems like, you know, if you go to the free gallery, there's the free gallery, and I think that just lets you check out, you know, how video works on your iPad if you're watching Hulu. And it says, you know, Hulu Plus gives you more of your favorite shows, which is the back catalog stuff, in HD, which is, you know, HD, and that's one of the pluses of Hulu Plus. But also one of those features is now on the iPhone, iPad, TV, and more, which indicates to me that Hulu Plus is the only way to get the standard Hulu content on your iPad. At least that's just how it's being presented right now. If you go to TV, you know, I don't have a Hulu Plus subscription, but it, you know, it shows everything that is on Hulu. but it all has Hulu Plus. The only thing you can check out is the free gallery, and that doesn't have a whole lot of content. I think there are, you know, 20 videos.
Hmm.
And if that's the case, then, you know, boo on that.
All right, I'll have to go play with it more.
It might just be a beta thing, but I'm guessing that's how they're going to do it. So, yeah, Frash is coming. It's called Frash, F-R-A-S-H. I'll probably talk about it more once it's working on the iPad, but it's very exciting. Also, on the jailbreak front,
Can I say one more thing on the Hulu thing before we move on, though? Where I've come down on my opinion with the Hulu stuff is that I'm more irked that Hulu just doesn't get it. And I kind of just don't want to support them at all in general, Flash, no Flash, or otherwise, because, you know, you look at an app like the ABC app and you're like, okay, these guys get it and they're doing an awesome thing and it's fabulous and it's free and they get the change that's happening with how we want to consume media. And Hulu just seems like they're trying to, like, force some weird old model and thought process on the whole thing.
Well, yeah, they're going to.
Of course they are.
They're making you pay and you have ads, just like cable.
Well, and keep in mind, Hulu is sort of like a deal between networks. So it was, what, NBC and Fox and I think a couple others that got the whole Hulu thing happening. So you have people that look at broadcast media in the same way that they always have. And now they're trying to force that model onto the internet. And that model has already failed on the internet, by and large. And to expect that they can continue to push the same style of model that they've used for television on the internet, I think is short-sighted. And I think if the people that are actually trying to make Hulu happen were able to do exactly what they want without the interference of the networks, that Hulu would be different from the way it is. Although I think that there's definitely a place for Hulu in the whole world now that we have the whole portable streaming thing that we can do.
Well, yeah, and here's the thing that proves what you're talking about, where it's really the networks and the studios and stuff screwing this up, is the most awesome thing ever, and the model that I'd really like to support is what Netflix is doing. But
yeah,
the biggest problem with Netflix streaming, if anybody who uses it knows this, but, you know, I've been using it pretty heavily, and it's about content. Netflix cannot get content on there. You know, it's like old stuff. They got a lot of great documentaries and indie films, which is awesome. I'm watching a lot more of that content. So this is what the studios need to pay attention to, because they're not offering me what I want in a place and at somewhere where I'm already paying, and I'd even be willing to pay a little more. But I'm not going to pay $10 over here and $10 over there and $15 over there to aggregate all this content and then have to go to three different places to get it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you can get Waterworld on Netflix streaming. and Jurassic Park 3.
but I'm rediscovering that, and I'm rediscovering all these great, or, you know, finding these new indie films, these great documentaries and stuff like that. So I'm just changing. I mean, I'm literally changing my viewing behavior to match the content that I'm consuming.
Yeah.
So they're not winning. They're losing is I guess the point that I'd want to make. And I don't want to go support, you know, this kind of broken, weird model.
You're saying that Hulu is losing.
Well, the networks are losing.
Well, yeah, and I would like to interject that.
Sorry,
I just want to interject that Netflix, I think, has in recent months has greatly expanded their selection. I'm finding more and more compelling content, stuff that I would definitely want to watch, is on Netflix, and I try to as often as I can, you know, vote with my clicks and my dollars and go to Netflix as often as possible.
Right.
And it's great. You know, it's on the iPad and I can plug it in. Have you plugged in your iPad into your TV with a Netflix going? It's really cool that you can just, I'm walking around with my iPad and okay, I'm going to watch on the TV now for 15 minutes or whatever.
Yeah, and you plug in and yeah. Now, Michael, are you using the component cables, or are you doing a VGA connection?
I am. What is the the one where it's red, white, and yellow. Is that component or composite?
That's composite.
Yeah, so I'm using the crappy. Is that why it didn't fill up my picture on my 32-inch?
Yeah, because you're using the crappy connection.
Okay, I need to get the better connection.
Right. Which one should you be using?
You should be using the one that has the RGB plugs along with the stereo.
So that's component.
Component.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. So you want component where the colors are split out as opposed to composite where it's all jammed into one wire.
Okay.
Right. I haven't done it because I only have the VGA, and I could go VGA into my TV, but that'll look like
VGA.
That'll look kind of crappy too.
Yep.
Yeah. So, and isn't that component cable like a $50 iPod cable or whatever?
Ugh. It's $40 or $50. I think it's
yeah,
40.
See, I won't buy it on principle because that's ridiculous.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. Okay. So
maybe I haven't checked if Monoprice sells a cable.
Ooh,
that would be the place to go.
I'll be checking that out.
Adam's probably checking it right now.
Oh, well, then Adam can let us know. But okay. In the other bit of jailbreak news, Comix, I believe it's Comix and Muscle Nerd have reported on Twitter that I think I said that jailbreak for iPhone 4 has been accomplished. They're still working on it, but they're also working on the unlock, and I believe they have succeeded in unlocking, or they're very close to unlocking the iPhone 4. So they're working on that, and I'm guessing that from everything I've seen, they're waiting until the 4.01 update where we'll see the bars go down, you know, to make sure that Apple doesn't screw up the jailbreak. Yeah, just so it doesn't screw up the jailbreak when the next one comes out, because it's coming out so soon, and they have other things to do anyway, so they've just decided to wait for the iPhone 4. But it is coming, so I'm excited, and you should be too if you do care about jailbreak. So with that, we got a question about the iPhone 4 story. Let me see if I can. Geez, where did I put that? Google Voice. Here we go. This is from Lee.
Hey, guys, this is Lee from Massachusetts.
What was that?
My internet just exploded. I opened up a video.
Pinch that pipe.
That was the Portal 2, one of the Portal 2 videos I clicked on accidentally. Okay, so here's Lee's call.
Hey, guys, this is Lee from Massachusetts. Just had a question about the Find My iPhone. I didn't know why you just didn't use the me.com interface on the web instead of trying to trick your phone into negative 313. Any comments on that? If you want to say something, let us know. Thanks, guys. Bye.
Okay. So with the I talked about my Find My iPhone. I found my phone with Find My iPhone last week. And I mentioned that I had to change my friend Omar, who he was on 312, and we had to trick his phone into thinking that it was 313 so we could download the Find My iPhone application. The reason I did use the online mobile me interface when I went to the Starbucks coffee shop initially, but the real magic happens when you can get it on an iPhone, because, you know, hop in the car, let's track this guy as he moves. And that's exactly
right. And
what
you can't use the Mobile Me interface on an iPhone.
Correct.
Or iPad.
Right.
Directly.
It directs you to the app when you do that, if you go to me.com. So, yeah, that's the reason why we did that. And Steven also called in and with this comment.
Hey, it's Steven in Milwaukee. Hey, I just wanted to say I loved your lost iPhone story. That was just awesome. One thing I was thinking of is with the new iPhone 4, it'd be really cool if Apple would update Mobile Me that find your lost iPhone such that it takes pictures of the person using it every once in a while. So you could actually prove who took the phone. Not only could you find it based on the location, but you could actually prove who was holding it, who was using it. That'd be kind of cool. Love the show.
Yeah, thanks, Steven. I don't know if Apple would do this. They might see it as like a privacy issue, maybe they would. It'd be fantastic that, you know, we'd have more evidence against the guy.
If Apple did it in such a way that you had to opt in to the photo taking.
Right.
And so like when you did a Find My iPhone thing and you sent a message out, you could also check a box that says photograph who's using the phone.
Right, right, yeah.
And and when people start screwing around with the display, then maybe it takes a photo.
Yeah, now the one thing, if Apple doesn't do that, there are third parties who have been in the past and now with iOS 4 are also doing their own version of a Find My iPhone type deal. And now with iOS 4, they're doing some, you know, you can't have an application run in the background for real, but it can in some way run in the background such that it will send your location every so often. And I don't really know the details on that, but there are third-party applications that can perform many of the same Find My iPhone features. The two that a third-party app cannot do, however, is the remote lock, which saved my butt, number one, and number two, actually three. Two is
the maniacal devotion to the Pope.
Right, that. And the remote wipe and the remote message thing. Although, actually, it might be able to do the remote message. I take that back. But, yeah, there are third-party apps. I don't, you know, you might have to have that app open for it to use the camera. I don't think there's any way for one of those apps to access the camera with the background APIs.
Can I ask a quick question about the remote wipe? Because somebody told me this, and I think this is true, but I just want to verify. If you do remote wipe, then you lose the ability to track it anymore, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'm glad I didn't do that.
So, Michael, you don't have a passcode on your iPhone, am I correct in assuming that?
Not usually. When it's lost, yeah, I turn it on.
Okay.
Yep. So with that, you can get in touch with us by calling the phone number. The phone number is 202-642-6667, and you can call in with your questions and comments on stuff we talk about in this show. You can also email your comments. You get better audio quality, actually, if you email them to feedback@wehavecommunicators.com, so you can record it on your iPhone or your iPod Touch and send that email along with the attachment, and we will be able to play that back. Feedback@wehavecommunicators.com. I've also worked on actually porting the podcast out of iPhoneAlley.com to wehavecommunicators.com. I did that successfully, although some people have reported that it does weird things in iTunes because it seems like it's a different episode or a different podcast. I changed it back. You shouldn't have to worry about the feed URL unless you're not using the feed burner URL. So it should be a feed burner URL, and I will try to pull that up, but it should not do that. I'll see if I can make it a little bit easier for you guys to transfer over, but it should be feeds.feedburner.com/iPhoneAlley/podcast. So check that out in iTunes and see if it's working for you. iPhone picks. Jeff, would you like to go first?
Oh, iPhone picks. Sure. Okay, hold on.
And they're not iPhone picks. I should say iDevice picks, right?
Yes, hold on. I know what I wanted to pick. I just forgot what it's called. Mars Atlas. Okay, so Mars Atlas is what it sounds like. It's an atlas of Mars, but it's kind of interactive.
Does it have phone numbers?
Does it have what? I couldn't hear what you said.
Does it have phone numbers, I asked, of the extraterrestrials you can call?
Yes, but the long distance call rates are just atrocious.
And you have to hold your iPhone 4 in this really weird way.
Yeah, but that's just a ceremonial move.
Okay, continue. Yeah. I'm sorry.
That's all right. Okay, so Mars Atlas, it gives you a view of Mars, and it has major landmarks noted and information about all of the landmarks, and it can spin the globe around to show you the face of Mars that would be visible to you from Earth right now. and you can rotate it any direction you want and zoom in on parts of the planet. You can zoom in close enough that even though you can't see the Mars rovers, you can see the streaks from craters, like where wind has blown dirt around craters. And you can set it for night viewing, so it kind of does that red vision thing. And it's a very cool little app. And that's awesome. I don't know if it's for the iPhone or if it's just the iPad.
It's a universal app, Mars Atlas.
Okay, so $5 and...
Six bucks.
I'm doing great. You can search for features and you can learn everything you need to know about for your trip to Mars.
Cool. Mars Atlas, and it's $6 in the iTunes. Adam, what is your pick?
I'm going to make a pick with some tentative reservations because I haven't used it a lot. I just tried this app, but you know that I grabbed a copy of iMovie for my iPhone. And one of the things that I discovered was that when uploading directly from the iPhone, you cannot upload 720p video, right? It reses it down. You have to bring it back to your Mac and then upload it from there. Well, there is an app, and I think I found it through Guy Kawasaki on Twitter. There's an app called Pixel Pipe. You guys heard of this app?
I have.
Yeah, and so I tried it out. I did a short video, and I uploaded it to YouTube in full 720p. It showed up fine. I could tag it. It was pretty easy to set up, and it has support for, like, tons of services. You can do Google Docs and FTP and Gallery and Facebook and, I mean, you name it. It uploads photos and videos to, like, every service. And so you can set it up, and then you can upload sort of all in one click to a bunch of different locations. I only used the YouTube uploading just to see if it would upload the full 720p. And like I said, it worked fine, although I'm noticing on their reviews a lot of people saying that it is crashing for them. So that's why I've got a few reservations about it. So your mileage may vary. I had no issues with crashing. They do note that maybe there's some issues if you have over 1,000 items in your camera roll. But I don't have that many items in my camera roll. So, if you know, just buyer beware on this. Well, it's free, so buyer beware for a free app. But worked beautifully for me, and the video did upload. It does have a 720p upload limit of 200 megabytes, it notes in the... the version, so the video
so
has
it's going to be small videos. Megs.
Yeah, and my only complaint when I did upload it is it took a really long time. I only had like I forget how many seconds. It was like a 20-second video, and it took like 20 minutes to upload at 720p, so over Wi-Fi. I'm not sure why that was, and I don't think I had a particularly bad Wi-Fi connection where I was, but the point is it worked. It got around the limitation that's built into iMovie, and so Pixel Pipe is my pick.
Cool. Now, will that upload in the background, and is it iOS 4?
Yes. The newest version, version 2.0.1, supports background uploading.
Oh, cool. Awesome. All right. So my pick is an iPad case, and it is the Spec Candy Shell. And I've used this case for, I'd say, a week or two. It's a hard case, so it's if you're familiar with the see-through case from Spec that hooks onto a MacBook, for example. This is similar to that. So it's hard plastic. It's very rugged and it looks nice. The only difference between a see-through and this candy shell really is that it is not see-through. Now it comes in two colors. You can get the Batwing Black or the Nightshade Purple. I got the Batwing Black. It doesn't do a whole lot except for protect the back of the iPad, which is precisely what I want it to do, although it does have one great feature where the bottom portion is normally covered by the case, except that you can pop it open and swing it back so you can plunk it down into your iPad dock. So if you have a keyboard dock or a standard iPad dock like I have, then you can open that up, plug it in, and you're good to go. It also has the correct spots, the correct openings for headphones, the microphone at the top. It has a pass-through rubberized button for the volume controls and the sleep-wake button, as well as a spot to get to the rotation lock, and it has a hole for the speaker as well. Actually, it's a grill for the speaker, so it's very nice. It you know, adds a bit of thickness to the iPad, which actually feels good in the hand. So even better than the iPad as it is naked. So, and you can it just kind of gives me a little more peace of mind, and I feel like I can chuck the iPad around a little bit more than I would otherwise. And it looks nice, and it seems to be holding up pretty well. Although I can't speak to how, you know, how many times I can pop this little pass-through door open to plunk it into the dock. I'll have to use it for a few more weeks, but it is, it's a rubberized hinge, so, you know, that may degrade over time as you open and close it. But yeah, it's the Spec Candy Shell. It's $50. You can get it from, I think it's specproducts.com. And yeah, that's my pick. So with that, I will say that you can check us out at wehavecommunicators.com, or for those who don't like to type as much, whcpodcast.com. The site is up and going. You can send your feedback, any emails you have. Don't send it to podcast@iPhoneAlley. That'll, you know, confuse things, and I'll have to find it and forward, and just don't send it to that email address. The email address you want is feedback@wehavecommunicators.com. Again, it's feedback@wehavecommunicators.com. You can find Adam Christensen at the Maccast, maccast.com, and twitter.com/maccast, as well as the member site,
right,
the premium version, member.maccast.com.
Absolutely.
Yep. Thanks for being here, Adam. And you can find Jeff Gamet at the Mac Observer, of course, macobserver.com, twitter.com/jgamet, and his new Cafe Press store, cafepress.com/jgamet, and zazzle.com/jgamet, where you can get those wonderful drawings that he does on his iPad. Thanks for being here, Jeff.
Oh, sure thing. And thanks for pimping me. You rock.
Yeah. Are all the drawings you make, are they for the most part done on your iPad?
Actually, every drawing that's available on Cafe Press and Zazzle was done on my iPad.
And is that, which application is that?
That's using Art Studio.
Cool.
So, yeah, so my setup for that is my iPad, Art Studio, the Pogo Sketch Stylus, and I designed a little, it's sort of like a hockey puck thing that I set my hand on, so that my the palm of my hand doesn't register as strokes on the iPad.
Oh, cool.
Did you see the 10-1 videos that they did, the video test with the
precision
sensitivity, and they are able to do touch, what do they call it, touch rejection, or they can now detect that it's your palm and ignore that?
You know, If they could actually release that, and I understand because of API restrictions they can't, but if they could, that would make the little hand rest that I designed completely unnecessary for drawing.
Can you explain what they demoed for those who don't know?
Yeah, what they demoed was using their Pogo Sketch stylus to draw on an iPad. And they actually laid their hand on the surface of the iPad. And I'm assuming because of the amount of surface space on the iPad that was being contacted, it knew that the application knew that wasn't the touch area. But when they would touch with their finger or tip or with the stylus, it would register that instead.
Yeah,
and it was able to register pressure sensitivity as well.
Yep.
Now, is that that's a software thing, right?
Yeah, it's all software.
And are they planning to release it? Are they using private APIs or?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah,
they
so
have the demo on their blog. Yeah, if you go to 101design.com and then go to the blog area, you can see the video. My guess is that maybe they're able to tell with the stylus, maybe the stylus has a different capacitive signature than the palm of the hand, and so they can tell, oh, that's the stylus versus that's your hand. But I'm, again, just theorizing.
I would love to be able to play with that, knowing full well that it can't be released right now. I would still love to be able to play with it and just see how it works for me. So, hey, if anyone at 10-1 Design is listening, call me.
Yeah. Cool. All right. And with that, we'll see you next time on We Have Communicators.
An internet.
How are we going to communicate this?
The stylus.
We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do? Oh, a stylus, right? We're going to use a stylus. No.
Yuck.
No. Who wants a stylus? You have to get them and put them away and you lose them.
Yuck.
Wants a stylus. So let's not use a stylus. Nobody wants a stylus. So let's not use a stylus.